It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome, everybody, to the weekly download of the RTC, the Radio Theater Channel. Today we have two dramas for you and a comedy to wrap things up. On Stage with Elliot and Kathy Lewis, and The Ideal Couple is first. We'll follow that with a program, A Favorite Story and The Debt Collector. And we'll laugh along with Charlie McCarthy and their guest, Dick Powell, from 1949. But right now, it's Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage.
Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. Kathy Lewis, Elliot Lewis, two of the most distinguished names in radio, appearing each week in their own theater, starring in a repertory of transcribed stories of their own and your choosing. Radio's foremost players in radio's foremost plays. Ladies and gentlemen, Elliot Lewis.
Good evening. May I present my wife, Kathy?
Good evening.
We're privileged tonight to introduce to you a new author. The young man is better known as an actor and announcer, but as you will soon hear, he also can write more than his name.
May we present Tom Dixon?
Good evening.
The play is called An Ideal Couple. And since Tom wrote it and also has the other gifts Elliot mentioned, he will play the radio announcer in the story.
So, Tom, Kathy, here we go with An Ideal Couple.
Mrs. Johnson, I'll bet you say that to all the boys.
I don't know all the boys.
Oh, you are the sweetest talking little lady we've met in a long, long time. Mr. Johnson, how do you ever hold your own being married to a woman with such a way with words?
Well, it's all right.
All right, huh? Well, tell me, when is this gift of gab of hers most apparent?
Well, you know...
I'll bet it's twice as powerful when the little darling wants a new hat, huh?
At least twice.
Now let's get on with a more serious aspect of the situation. Mrs. Johnson, do you know why the Johnsons are on our program, happy, though married?
Oh, I think I do.
How about you, Mr. Johnson?
I'm afraid not.
You mean you don't know why you're here?
No, I don't.
Oh, do you have a surprise coming to you? Because the judges have decided that Mrs. Johnson's letter was the best received in this month's contest, which makes the Johnsons our ideal couple on Happy, Though Married. I told you I had a surprise to you, Mr. Johnson. How do you feel now?
Bewildered.
Bewildered, huh? How about you, Mrs. Johnson? How do you feel?
Just wonderful.
I'll bet you do. Well, before we tell you about those grand surprise gifts our sponsors have lined up for you, let's sketch in a bit of your married life to prove that you deserve to be our ideal couple. Now to start with, Mrs. Johnson, how long have you been married?
25 years this month.
25 years. Now that deserves a hand. Now, how long did you know each other before you became engaged?
Oh, we knew each other from the time we were children, but we didn't start going together until Stan finished college.
Now, how did your first date come about?
We really didn't have a first date. I went to a high school graduation party with another beau. And, well, you know how those things happen.
Oh, do I? Mr. Johnson looked pretty good to you, huh?
Well, yes.
Now, I want you to listen to the song Larry Robbins is going to play on the organ. Larry? You know what that song is?
No.
No.
That's one of the songs that was popular in those days when you two fine people first met. A song that we understand was played at that party Mrs. Johnson was just talking about. Mr. Johnson, did you come to the party alone?
As a matter of fact, I did. Gee, Howie, I'd forgotten how cozy these hometown parties were.
After the glamour of the university? Sounds a bit silly, Stan.
Well, nothing there was quite like this.
You mean no party at State had Leola Webb in attendance?
Oh, is that obvious?
Obvious? Would a swat in the nose seem obvious? You've been staring at her all night.
She certainly has,
Bloom? That's the word you're searching for, my friend. Why don't you ask her to dance?
I'd like to, but she came with Benton, didn't she?
Don't let the great Jim Benton scare you off. Leola's just a passing fancy with that lad.
Why did he let her sit on the sidelines while he swaps jokes with the boys?
Maybe the jokes are safer.
What do you mean by that crack?
Nothing. Nothing at all. Besides, she's not sitting on the sidelines. She's heading this way. Bet she asked one of us to dance. I bet it's you.
Oh, you must be crazy.
Bet your butt.
Okay.
Hello, Stanley. When did you get back from the university?
Well, yesterday. Yeah, it was yesterday.
Wonderful. Just wonderful to have you back. This is a lady's choice, Stanley. I thought, that is if you care to...
To dance?
Oh, brilliant.
Yes, would you care to?
Yeah, he'd be delighted.
Hello, Howard.
Good evening, Leola. Well, don't just stand there, old man. Get going.
Oh, yes. It was very nice of you, Leola, to invite me to dance with you.
It wasn't nice of me at all. I just wanted to dance with one of the handsomest men in the crowd.
Johnson, you owe me a dollar.
What do you owe that awful Howard Rhines $1 for?
Oh, nothing. That's just an old bet we had.
What do you see in Howard as a friend?
Oh, I don't know. We've been friends all our lives. Why do you ask?
Just curious.
You're with Jim Benton tonight, aren't you?
I suppose you could call it that, yes. You dance very well, Stanley.
Thank you. You dance beautifully. Just beautifully. I tell you, I think that Benton must be a bit silly in the head.
What do you mean, Stanley?
Passing up a chance to dance with you for a few... Oh, spoke too soon. Here he comes.
Really?
Just my luck.
I wonder what got into Mr. Benton.
Well, what do you mean?
Oh, I mean, isn't that just like a man? Ignore a girl all night, and then just when she starts to have a little fun...
So she asked you to dance, huh? You accepted, of course.
As a matter of fact, I didn't.
You didn't?
No, I was too scared. A friend accepted for me.
Well, so much for your first romantic meeting. Now let's get to the proposal. And Mr. Johnson, don't tell me you let her do that, too.
No, I did that all right.
How was he, Mrs. Johnson? Romantic?
Oh, my, yes.
Do you think you were romantic, Mr. Johnson?
I guess you could call it that, yes.
And did you get down on your knees?
Oh, I went farther than that. I was flat on my stomach. Yeah. That was the nicest picnic spread I've eaten in a long time.
I'm glad you like it.
And the spot. The brook, the trees, wildflowers. I haven't felt this good in my whole life.
Why should you feel so extra special good today?
Oh, a lot of reasons. The food was good. The spot is lovely. The grass feels good against my belly. Excuse me, stomach. And the greatest reason, I guess, is because you're here.
Really, Sam?
I mean it. You're wonderful. It's just too bad Mary and Bob couldn't come after accepting your invitation and everything.
Oh, you know, Bob and Mary... always changing plans at the last second.
Yeah. They do seem to be happily married, though.
I suppose so. Bob certainly isn't my idea of a good husband.
Oh? Who is?
Who's what?
Your idea of a good husband. Jim Benton?
Me? Marry Jim Benton? If Jim Benton were the last man alive, I'd be an old maid. I'd certainly like a nickel for every time Mr. Benton proposed to me.
I thought all the girls considered him such a whale of a catch.
Not this young lady.
What type of man would you like to have for a husband?
Oh, I don't know. Somebody that's considerate, steady, easy to get along with. Good looking, too, maybe.
Uh-huh, I see.
Why'd you ask, then?
Well, Leola, I...
Yes, Stanley.
Leola, I don't qualify for looks much, but I am steady. I think I'm considerate, and people say I'm easy to get along with. We've been seeing each other pretty steady for almost a year now, ever since Jim Benton left town. And I honestly think you're the most wonderful girl I could ever hope to know. This might seem sudden to you, but I've thought about us an awful lot. And the more I think, the more I...
Go on, Stanley.
The more I think we could be happy together. I love you so very much. Please marry me. Huh?
Stanley, of course I'll marry you.
Well, how do you mean, Mr. Johnson? You were flat on your stomach.
We were on a picnic, and I was stretched out on my stomach in the grass.
And you accepted his proposal, Mrs. Johnson, even though he spoke it from that unromantic posture?
I certainly did.
And glad you did, too, I bet. Now about arguments. Did you have many disagreements in your 25 years of married life?
Oh, just a few. Little ones.
I see. Mr. Johnson, how did you settle your quarrels?
We compromised.
Compromised?
She saw things her way, and I saw things her way.
There now, Dougie. Darling, Mommy's right here to see your little man doesn't cry. There, no.
Leola, I think you picked Douglas up too much. Aren't you going to spoil him?
Spoil him? With love and affection? Spoil him, trying to make up for the things his father doesn't give him?
What thing?
But you think it's right to raise a child in a one-bedroom, walk-up apartment?
Well, it may not be right, dear, but it's all we can afford. Lots of kids grow up strong and healthy in worse places than this.
Not my son. I'll not raise my son in this dirty, ugly little flat.
Well, it's not dirty and it's not ugly. Howard says he thinks you've done a wonderful job decorating the place.
Howard? What does he know about decorating?
Just thought you'd be pleased.
Oh, I'd be pleased if you'd stop spending so much of your time with Howard.
Why?
Well, he's not a good influence on you. He's lazy. He has no ambition.
Honey, please. In the first place, I don't spend all of my time with Howard. And besides, I'm not a child. I'm not liable to be influenced that easily. Now, please, let's just stop this. You're tired and I don't blame you. But honestly, we're doing fine. Now, tell me the truth, aren't we?
Compared to Alice and Jim Benton, we're doing quite badly.
Jim Benton inherited a factory and $100,000. How can you compare us to Jim Benton? Be reasonable, dear.
Be reasonable. Why don't you start being reasonable? I don't worry about myself, Stanley, but we've got a son now. You have responsibilities. You can't afford to let yourself be pushed around. You can't afford to let yourself be talked out of a raise that you deserve. You've got a son.
Tell me what it is you want of me, Leola. I want to make you happy. I'll do everything in my power to make you happy. Just tell me what it is you want.
Those are big words.
I mean them. I swear it to you. I mean them.
You've got to stop sitting around, Stanley. You've got to progress. You're too easygoing for your own good.
You used to tell me you liked an easygoing man.
But you aren't going at all. You're at a standstill. You don't seem to have any ambition. You're so ridiculously content, and you haven't got anything.
I have a lovely wife and a fine son and a job and a place to live. What more do I need?
Do you think Jim Benton would be content?
Jim Benton! You always come back to him. Benton was born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He's a drunk, a boor, and a vicious snob, but you hold him up as a shining example of manhood. Why, I don't know. Sometimes I think you wish you'd married him.
He had only to ask me.
What?
You heard me.
I'll see you later.
Where are you going?
Does it really matter?
No, no, Dougie, no. Did that mean old daddy of yours slam the door and make my little baby boy cry?
Saw things her way and you saw things her way. Oh, that's pretty good, Mr. Johnson. It's just such a sense of humor about serious matters that made you and Mrs. Johnson this month's ideal couple on Happy Though Married. And now, in just a moment, we'll continue your story. But first...
You are listening to Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. Tonight's play, An Ideal Couple. With warm weather here and people outdoors more often, this is a good time to get safety-minded about our timberlands. 9 out of 10 of last year's foremost fires were man-made. Americans have a vital stake in our woodlands and their contribution to national defense. Don't burn them up. Let them grow. Crush cigarettes out, really out. Douse campfires thoroughly. Turn them over and douse them again. Prevent forest fires. Save America's timber reserves.
And here we are back on Happy Though Married. So far, we've found that this month's ideal couple, Mr. and Mrs. Stanley Johnson, met at a party. She asked him for a dance. He proposed while lying on his stomach in the grass at a picnic, and that they faced their little differences with humor and compromise. Now, just a few more questions, and we'll present them with a host of surprise gifts from our sponsor. Now, for instance, how about vacations? Did you spend them together or separately?
Well, the first few we spent separately, but... we've spent them together ever since.
Why did you start out separately?
Well, I liked to fish, but Leola didn't.
I learned to like fishing.
How about that? She learned to like fishing?
Ah, that was one corking good meal, my friend.
So it was.
What's the matter, Stan? Anything new?
Why, yeah.
Look, I've known you for 100 years. I can read your moods like a book. You've been gathering wool all through lunch. What's up?
Nothing.
Leola? Did she find out we're still having lunch together?
Yeah.
Look, Stan, don't let it get you down. We can just as easily skip these lunches. Don't be blue, boy. Hey, you're forgetting our annual 2-week quest for those beautiful mountain trout is only a month away.
Yeah.
What's the matter?
Leola wants to go along.
Oh?
She said she hated to be away from me. She said she realized I needed a rest, but she thought it was selfish of me to go away alone when she doesn't get any time off with any of her friends. Well, with the boy and everything.
Huh?
And, well, it kind of surprised me because, well, you know, she doesn't really like the great out of doors, as she calls it. And it's real sweet of her to want to go along with us when she doesn't really like it that much.
With you?
What?
Go along with you. She knows I won't go if she goes.
Why do you say that? That's not true. She said what a good time the three of us would have.
She didn't mean it. She wants you 52 weeks out of the year. She certainly doesn't want to give you up for 2 weeks to me and some fish. She's going to horn in on that, too, so she'll take everything that you have that's you and destroy
it. All right, Howie, that's enough.
It's true, you poor, stupid jerk. Can't you see it's true?
I said that's enough. Now, cut it out. You've no reason to talk about her like that. She's my wife. Cut it out.
All right. I'm sorry, Stan.
That's all right, then. Don't talk about it anymore.
No, really, you're quite right. I had no reason to speak that way. I'm sorry.
You talk as if I were unhappy. How I tell you, I'm not unhappy.
Okay, Stan, let's forget I mentioned it, huh?
Those fishing trips were fun, though.
If they were, my friend, if they were...
maybe next year.
Oh, my, Mrs. Johnson, you killed me. Just like that, she says, I learned to like fishing. Oh, no wonder you're an ideal couple. Well, we're getting close to those payoff gifts from our sponsors. But first, Let me ask you about your family. Did you raise any children?
Just one.
A boy or a girl?
A boy, Douglas.
And judging from the gleam in your eye, Mrs. Johnson, he's Mama's pet.
Oh, he's a wonderful boy.
Mr. Johnson, does Douglas favor you or his mother?
Well, there the boy was really lucky.
Why?
Well, he looks like me and he acts like his mother.
After a thorough review of the case of the People versus Douglas Johnson, in which the defendant has been found guilty as accused, the court passes the following sentence. The theft of $250 represents a major crime. But in the opinion of the court, since this is the defendant's first offense and the money has been returned, society's demand for punishment in this case might only make a hardened criminal out of a sensitive, restless boy. Therefore, the court sentences you, Douglas Johnson, to 2 years in prison, sentence suspended. You are hereby placed in the custody of your parents for the duration of said sentence. Court dismissed.
Doug, my baby.
I'm glad you're free, son. I can't say that I'm happy about the whole thing, but maybe it's taught you a lesson.
Lesson, indeed. Doug would never have taken that $250 if you'd given him a little more spending money.
No boy of 18 needs
more
than what
I know. Then there's the line, when I was a boy, I only got $1 a week. Well, your folks were poor. We're not. But you insist on raising Doug like he belonged to a family of paupers. I know my boy. He's not a common thief. If you'd only give him a decent allowance.
I can only say, Mr. Johnson, that if your son is as handsome as you and as charming as his mother, he must be quite a boy. Well, as our ideal couple, you've enjoyed a rich, full life together. Now, what about the future? Mrs. Johnson, what are your plans?
I think I'll start spending a little of that money we've worked so hard to save.
Stacking new hats every day, huh? How about you, Mr. Johnson? What are you going to do with the future?
Well, now that I'm 55, I think I finally acquired the wisdom to start living like a kid of 25.
Sam, for 25 years we've been sneaking lunches in this back alley greasy spoon. I've always wound up by saying, that was a corking good meal. Or words to that general effect. Today I can't honestly say that.
Why not, Howie? I thought the steak was pretty good.
A meal is more than food, Stan. It's an occasion for comradeship, conviviality, and general good cheer. And you, my lifelong crony, have been anything but the ideal companion for such an event.
I'm sorry.
There you sit, a retired businessman. You've achieved a goal that few men ever reach. You should be bursting with pride and happiness.
I know. I just seem to have lost interest in things.
Lost interest in things? Sam, my boy, you've lost more than that. You've lost your life. They've squashed you down to the size of a worm.
Who?
Don't be evasive. Your wife, Leola. Your son, Doug, that's who. Between the two of them, they've knocked the stuffings out of a wonderful guy and left you. Whatever it is that you've become.
Shut up, Howie.
Okay.
No. Don't shut up. You're right. I'm sorry. But it stings to hear someone put into words the secret thoughts with which you've lived intimately for years. I'm 55. I have money, position, a wife, and a son. And I'm terribly unhappy because none of it gives me pleasure.
Stan, you're only 55. And why don't you do something about it?
What can I do to change it now?
You've even lost the power to hope. How does a man get that way? What makes you play act at being the ideal husband for so long? You haven't loved Leola for years, have you? Have you?
No. Not for years.
All right, then why do you stick?
I don't know. First it was Doug, I guess. Then it was a sense of duty. Lately, habit.
Habits can be broken, you know.
How?
What? To start with, why don't you join me in my life's big moment? That world cruise I was telling you about. You've gone for one whole big, beautiful year. Love to have you along. I leave next Friday night.
I couldn't.
understand. Do I have to start painting the dreary picture of your future if you don't make the break?
No, no. I'm fully aware of those horrors. A trip around the world. It'll be fun, all right.
It'll make up for all those fishing trips we never had.
When are you leaving?
Next Friday night.
All right, I'll go.
Good. That's just fine, Stan.
I promised Leola I'd go to a radio broadcast with her on Friday afternoon. She wrote a letter or something, I don't know. Then we'll leave Friday night.
Friday night. Then you'll be free of it, Stan, on Friday night.
Oh, and I'll bet at 55, Mr. Johnson, you'll put to shame any squirt of 25. Well, there they are, ladies and gentlemen, the Johnsons. This month's ideal couple on our program, Happy Though Married. Mrs. Johnson's letter, awarded first place by our judges, is going to win for this ideal couple the following wonderful prizes. First, a set of beautifully matched wardrobe trunks. Inside, you'll find clothing for both of you to last for years. We secretly got your measurements. Besides clothing, you'll find jewelry, shaving accessories, toiletries, sewing kit, even shoelaces. Everything needed to clothe and keep a man and wife in comfort for a long, long while. Because in just 30 seconds, you will be whisked from the studio and taken by special limousine to the airport. A plane is waiting there to fly you to the coast, where you'll board one of the largest luxury liners afloat to start a six-month fully paid cruise and tour of the continent of Europe. All this to start right now because you are our ideal couple. On your way and bon voyage!
An ideal couple starring Kathy and Elliot Lewis on stage. In a moment, Mr. and Mrs. Lewis will tell you about next week's play. Tomorrow night, there's music in the air on CBS Radio. Music and songs of foreign-born composers. Hear baritone host Donald Richards, soprano Camilla Williams, tenor Clark Dennis, song stylist Betty Cox, and Alfredo Antonini's orchestra with Avalon, Swedish Rhapsody, Alexander's Ragtime Band, I'm Walking Behind You, and many other top hits. Remember, tomorrow night on most of these stations, there's music in the air. And now, once again, Kathy and Elliot Lewis.
Tom Dixon's Venture into Writing. An ideal couple, with Tom playing the program master of ceremonies.
And Paul Frees grew young and then old with us.
Next week, we're going to do a play about the same kind of people, same age and circumstances, and also with a child. And by showing the other side of the coin, see what else can be done with three lives.
The story was written by Shirley Gordon, and she calls it A Day to Remember. It's fine listening for this time of the year.
Until next week, then, thank you for listening. Good night.
Good night.
Music for tonight's story was composed and conducted by Fred Steiner. The Kathy and Elliot theme is by Ray Noble, and the program is transcribed and directed by Mr. Lewis. George Walsh speaking. Sunday afternoons, hear the World Music Festivals on the CBS Radio Network.
The very productive couple, Kathy and Elliot Lewis, on stage, and the program was called Ideal Couple. The date on that was 6/18 of 53, and you're listening to the RTC Weekly Download, a podcast of old-time radio, and we hope you enjoy it. And coming up in a few weeks, we're going to have some recordings from the 2015 radio showcases held just outside of Seattle in Bellevue, Washington. I know you're going to want to hear that. Some great recreations, some of the greatest of all times, in fact. So you'll want to make sure to check up and listen to those when they're available. That's in a couple of weeks. Now, some more drama for you. It's going to be Favorite Story and the Debt Collector from 1948.
This is Ronald Coleman inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story. During the course of this Favorite Story series, we've brought you many famous titles by famous authors. But this is an exception. I'll wager 3-1 you've never heard of the story we're going to tell you now. But I'll wager 10-1 that you'll never forget it. The man who wrote this story is a French doctor named Maurice Lavelle. A well-known sportsman, patriot, war hero, a distinguished brain surgeon, and, by way of a hobby, a writer. Now, this Dr. Lavelle is quite a psychiatrist, an authority on that thin line which separates sanity from madness. And this Favorite Story takes place exactly on that borderline, that razor-sharp division between the crazy man and you. The story is called The Debt Collector, and it was chosen by one of your favorite movie stars, Van Johnson. Dr. Lavelle wrote this story originally in French, But somehow we thought you'd enjoy it more if we translated it into English. And in so doing, we've transferred the locale from Paris to New York City. Now, are you ready for a thriller? All right, here it is. Van Johnson's favorite story, The Debt Collector. Act One.
Hey. Can you hear me? Good. Most people can't. You see, I'm not exactly alive. I'm not exactly dead either. It's pretty hard to figure out just what I am. Let me put it this way. I can see, hear, and think. But other people can't see or hear me. It's an interesting condition. Handy sometimes. It's handy when you want to wander up and down through a place like Manhattan Island. A couple of million people batting their brains out between the Staten Island ferry slips and Harlem. But nobody knows anybody else. Not really. But with me, it's different. I can be with them when they think they're alone. I can walk the beat with a copper down on Pell Street. Or I can be with a waitress at Child's when she gets off work and meets her boyfriend for a stroll in Central Park. Or I'm there, maybe, when a tough cab driver is crying on his steering wheel because his wife left him. It's hard to figure people right off. Take that guy in the gray double-breasted suit, that fellow walking up Madison Avenue between 23rd and 24th Street. How would you figure him? He seems happy enough from the way he's whistling. Would you say he looks prosperous? At first glance, you might think so, but notice his shirt collar. Isn't it a little frayed? And aren't his shoes a trifle run down at the heels? Where do you think he's going? goes into that office building, walks down the corridor to a frosted glass door, puts his hand on the doorknob, hesitates, looks around the hallway.
Bailey?
Yes, sir?
Where have you been? You're late.
I'm sorry, sir.
Well, our business is built on punctuality, dependability. That's why people trust us.
You've told me that before, Mr. Payne.
Remember it. I have some collections here, Maley. I want you to take them to the Uptown branch. It's cash. $43,000.
Yes, sir.
It's all counted out. Large denominations, mostly. Ask the cashier at the Uptown branch to give you a receipt.
Yes, sir. Oh, Mr. Crane, there's one thing I'd like to know.
Well?
Do you mark these bills?
Mark them?
Yeah, do you write down the serial numbers in case the money should be stolen?
Why should money be stolen? We hire only dependable people. Why do you think you've been with us all these years, Maley?
I know, sir. Dependability.
Now we see the same man walking down the same street with the same frayed collar and the same run-down heels. Take a good look at him. Would you ever guess that he had $43,000 in that yellow leather briefcase? $43,000. Maley, just a moment. He said distinctly that you were to take the money to the Uptown branch. Why are you going downtown?
Yes, sir?
Excuse me. I want to inquire about leaving something in your vault for safekeeping.
Well, we have safe deposit boxes for that purpose. They may be rented on a monthly or a yearly basis.
Well, I'll need a safe deposit box for about 10 years. I'll pay in advance.
That really isn't necessary. We can send you a statement.
No, that won't be practical. You see, I'm going away on a long trip.
I understand.
What's the procedure for claiming the contents of a safe deposit box?
We make the identification by name and signature.
Now, when I want to claim the box, I simply sign my name in your presence?
That's correct. I'll compare the signature with the one you give me now. In that way, we can identify you as the owner of the contents of the box.
Uh-huh. And no one can touch the box without writing that signature?
Not even the president of our bank.
That's good. That's fine. I want to deposit this parcel, please. No, don't open it.
What?
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to raise my voice. The parcel just contains something very personal, see?
I understand, sir. In what name shall I register this?
Shackleton.
Shackleton.
S-H-A-C-K-L-E-T-O-N. Shackleton. Jonathan R. Shackleton.
But Mr. Crane called you Maley. M-A-L-E-Y. Which are you, anyway? Do you think they aren't going to find out? Do you think they aren't going to miss that $43,000?
Crane speaking. What? It should have been there hours ago. $43,000. I sent one of the boys with it, Dick Maley. Oh, something must have happened to him. You'd better call the police. I'll ring his apartment. Check with me later. Right.
Phone's ringing, Maley. Aren't you going to answer it? Might be important. Might be Mr. Crane. Or it might be the police wondering if you mislaid something. Oh, let it ring, Maley. That's right. Take a good long look at yourself in the mirror. Pretty sharp.
That's a new shirt, isn't it, Maley? Good night, Maley. Or should I call you... What was that other name?
I've got those early in the morning, deep down in the evening blues. I've got those early in the morning, deep down in the evening blues.
You know, baby.
And when those blues done come and get you, they're mighty, mighty hard to lose.
Hey, what's the big idea? Maley.
Sang that song very pretty, baby.
You're hurting my arm.
Go tell the manager you've done your last number for tonight. We got us a big date, just you and me.
Sorry, Maley. I've had enough of your big date. Besides, I go on again right after this number.
I say you don't go on again.
Hey, where do you get off talking to me like that, you two-bit messenger boy?
That's all over, baby. Maley is through with those quarters and dimes. You listen to me, baby. This is my last night to have a good time, see? And I want to have it with you.
What if I've got other plans?
I just made your plans for tonight, baby. I'll be waiting for you in the lobby. Get your coat.
What do you want to come down here for? I was having a wonderful time doing this spot.
Were you?
Sure. Maybe you want to treat me to a swim in the East River.
It's not a bad idea, baby. Of course, you have to teach me how to swim.
You know something, Maley? You're crazy.
Am I?
Yeah, you're crazy, Maley. Any guy who'd take a date to the Queensboro Bridge is a little bit off his rocker. What do you see out there, Maley? What are you looking at?
What are you looking at, Maley?
A river. A city. Two cities. And a bridge in between. You know, baby, when I was a kid, I lived on the wrong side of this river. The Delta side. I lived out there where they make islands out of garbage. You can never get the smell of rotten orange peel out of your living room. I used to stand right here by the bridge and look across the river at the walled-off towers. Big place. Bridges are hard to get across, baby. You don't just get on a trolley or put a nickel on a turnstile.
What are you talking about, Maley? You live in Manhattan.
Yeah. But I never got away from the garbage smell.
She doesn't know what you're talking about, Maley. Say, why don't you brag to her? Tell her about the safe deposit box.
Baby, I've hit the jackpot.
You have?
You're going to hear some funny things about me, some lies. But I got a fortune, baby. Right where I can put my fingers on it. My fingers only.
Your fingers only, Maley. Not even the president of the bank can touch that box. Why not keep it that way? If you brag, it could spoil this thing. You might be sorry later.
How did you get the money, Maley?
Didn't you know? It grows on trees. All you have to do is reach up and pick it off.
Maley, there's a cop over there. They must be looking for you. They've missed the money by now, and if you're caught, you know what'll happen. They'll lock you up 5 years, if you're lucky. That cop's walking this way. He's coming right towards you.
Hello, officer.
Hi.
Nice night.
That's all right. Say, you folks better be getting off the bridge. They close this level at midnight, you know.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks a lot. Good night.
Hey.
Oh, officer.
Yeah?
Thought maybe you might be looking for me. My name is Maley.
Did you ever hear of the Grand Guignol in Paris? It's up in the Montmartre district. A little theater where they do nothing but horror plays, in which most of the actors usually wind up in an acid bath. Well, Maurice Lavelle, who wrote this week's favorite story, is considered more or less the William Shakespeare of the Grand Guignol. He's really the past master of the subtle horror story, as you're soon going to find out in the second act of The Debt Collector. Our erstwhile hero, Richard Maley, has just stolen $43,000 from his employer and, surprisingly enough, has promptly turned himself over to the police. Would you like to know why? Then keep right on listening to Van Johnson's favorite story.
You're Richard Maley.
That's right, sir.
The state's appointed me attorney on your behalf. I want to get the facts straight. You're accused of stealing $43,119.84 from your employer, the J.D. Crane Collection Agency. How do you want to plead?
Guilty.
Oh? Well, where's the money now?
I don't know. I had the money in my briefcase, but instead of taking it to the uptown branch where I was supposed to take it, I got on the subway to go home.
Yeah.
Well, in the subway jam, somebody just took my briefcase away from me, and well, when I got out of the crowd, all I had in my hand was an empty leatherette bag. Somebody must have substituted it for my briefcase.
Well, you know, of course, we can check up on that story, eh?
Oh, of course you can. I know. You can search my room, my desk at the office, my clothes, everything.
Now, look, Maley, I can't help you if you lie to me. You
put myself up, didn't I? I stole the money. Yes, I admit that. But I was robbed less than an hour later.
Will you swear to that in court?
I have no idea where that money is. That's the truth, sir. I'll swear to it by everything I hold sacred.
That gives a pretty good idea, Maley, about how much you hold sacred. Wonder who stole that money from you. Do you suppose it was the fella who gave a phony name when he got a safe deposit box? I'm beginning to see why you wanted to pay for that box for such a long time in advance. It's all beginning to make pretty good sense now.
The prisoner will stand to hear the sentence of this court. You have entered a plea of guilty to a charge of theft and embezzlement. The court, however, recognizes a recommendation of leniency in view of the fact that this is a first offense. I hereby sentence the prisoner to penal servitude for a period of 5 years.
What are you grinning for, Maley? Did you get off easier than you expected? You miss the ball games and the dances and the movies. But think how much you'll be making while you're there. $43,000 clear profit. That's $8,500 a year, tax-free and all yours, in return for spending 5 years as a non-paying guest of the state of New York. How many guys are smart enough to put away $43,000 in 5 years? Hey, do you recognize that guy in the double-breasted suit walking down Madison Avenue between 23rd and 24th Street? Sure, that's our boy. I lost your suntan, haven't you, Maley? A couple weeks in Bermuda will fix that. You can afford it. Feels pretty good to be free again, doesn't it? Oh, you're going to the bank, are you, Maley? I wonder what for.
All right, sir. Yes?
Excuse me. I want to claim the contents of a safe deposit box.
Certainly. If you'll just sign your name here, I'll compare it with a signature on the identification card. There's a fountain pen right there in the stand.
Yes, I know.
What's the name? I said, what is the name, sir?
Hey, Maley, the girl wants to know what name you gave for the safe deposit box.
What's
the matter? Did it slip your mind?
Your name, sir.
She's looking at you very strangely. Well, you can't blame her. It does seem a little peculiar that a fellow doesn't remember his own name.
I'm sorry, sir. There are people waiting. Unless you care to give me your name, I can't give you access to the safe deposit box.
Oh, that's bad. You'll have to think of that name or she won't give you your money.
Why, I suppose you think this is silly, but I've had a little lapse of memory. I'll be right back.
Yes, sir. Who's next, please?
I'd like to get it to my safe deposit.
Better sit down a minute, Maley. Clear your head. Got to get this thing straightened out.
I've got to get this thing straightened out.
Now, start at the beginning.
I know the name.
You came up to that same window, same girl, 5 years ago. You gave her the money to put in the vault in the safe deposit box, and you signed a name on a card. She's got it there in her file. Now, what was that name?
What was the name?
It was sort of an unusual name, wasn't it? Sort of a long one, 3 or 4 syllables. What letter did it begin with?
F. F. It began with an F.
F, Maley?
Oh. No, but it was an S. Stanton or Skipman or something like that.
Well, what was the first name? Maybe you can get it that way.
It was a biblical name. Jeroboam?
No.
Joshua? Jonah? Jonathan. That was it. Jonathan.
Was that it, Maley? Are you sure?
Jonathan.
Absolutely, positively sure?
What if it doesn't come? What if I never think of a name?
Oh, won't that be a pity? President of the bank can't even get to that money without signing the name. It's only a few feet away from you.
Just behind the grill and through that metal door.
Your money is in there, Maley. That woman's going in, see? She signs her name, and they unlock the door, and in she goes. It's as easy as that when you know the name. Simple as 1, 2, 3.
No, I gotta go about this systematically. Get a telephone book, that's it. A New York telephone book. Right straight through it. I'll come to the name. I'll come to the name. I'll find it. Aaron. Aaronson. Arant. Abba. Abba. Abachrome. Abadi. Abadi and Abilene.
Abba. 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 All this is dumb, Maley. You'll get so punchy looking at all those names, you'll never find it.
Abachrome. Abadi. I've got to think of it. I've got to get that name.
Did you write it down anyplace? No, you were too smart for that, weren't you, Maley? Did you tell anybody? You wanted to brag about it, remember? You were going to tell the girl about it, the nightclub singer.
At the club? I told her. She knows. She knows the name.
I've got those early in the morning, deep down in the evening blue. I've got those early...
Stop the music! Stop it!
Maley, good Lord!
What is it, baby? The name, what is it?
What are you talking about, Maley? What name?
You know the name. The name I gave at the bank for the safe deposit box. What is it?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Baby, you gotta help me. You can't do this to me.
What are you talking about, Maley?
What's the name? What's the name?
I'm
What's the name? Maley, get out of here! Get out!
Rumpelmeyer, Toppenetti, Schiaparelli.
You are crazy, Maley. Crazy as a bat.
Sherry Netherland, Park Central, St. Regis.
It wasn't the name of a hotel, Maley. It was just an ordinary name. A plain, ordinary, everyday name.
I'll think of it. I've got to think of it.
No, Maley, it's gone. You'll never think of it.
I will.
The money will lie there in that bank vault until it's covered over with gray mold. Your money. But you won't be able to get it because you can't think of the name. Why not forget the whole thing? Enjoy yourself. You used to like this view from Queensboro Bridge. Used to stand here when you were a kid and dream of crossing over to the other side, to Park Avenue and Beekman Place. But bridges are hard things to get across, aren't they, Maley? What are you looking down into the water for, Maley? See your reflection down there in the moonlight? It's a long way down there, Maley. Must be 100 feet straight down. Oh, I wouldn't climb up on the railing like that. If I were you, fella, might fall off. It's deep down there, and you can't swim, remember? Careful, Maley. You'll lose your balance. Careful!
Shackleton! The knife! I got it! Help! I remember it! Jonathan R. Shackleton!
Poor Richard Maley, rest in peace. A surprising story, isn't it? And any one of us who has ever tried to remember a forgotten name knows exactly how Maley must have felt. We've had a distinguished cast in the studio for this favorite story. Our invisible narrator was Tom Tully, whose face and voice are familiar to you in many fine motion pictures. Tony Barrett played Richard Maley. Tony was brought to Hollywood some time ago because of his startling resemblance to the late Rudolph Valentino. He has stayed on here to make a fine name for himself in both motion pictures and radio. Claude Sweeten composed and conducted the music with a slight assist from Anton Dvorak. As always, Jerome Lawrence and Robert E. Lee wrote and directed Favorite Story. Van Johnson, who chose The Debt Collector, will soon be seen in another motion picture for Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, the studio which brings to the screen so many of your favorite stories. Next week, a delightful and fantastic half hour. Jonathan Swift's great satire, Gulliver's Travels. You're going to meet an amazing assortment of thumb-sized characters, including General Glumbuck, Admiral Flimnap, and His Royal Highness Galbasto Malialigo, Scourge of the Universe. Yes, we're all going to travel into the tiny kingdom of the Lilliputians. It's the favorite story of one of motion picture's top-flight actors, Academy Award winner Ray Milland. Gulliver's Travels is a very special treat, so we hope you'll be listening.
That's Ronald Coleman hosting Favorite Story and The Debt Collector from 1948, and a story, I guess, it was written in French and translated over to English for the specific show. So, very good of them, and thankfully they did that. Well, we've had enough drama for today. It's time for comedy in the form of Charlie McCarthy. And the guest on this program is Dick Powell, the detective. From 1949.
Coca-Cola brings you Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy. It's Sunday night, and time again for Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy. With Mortimer Snerd and Ray Noble and his orchestra, brought to you each week by the Coca-Cola Company. Tonight's special guest is the motion picture and radio star, Dick Powell. And now, Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy.
Well, Charlie, here we are.
Oh, gee, Bergen, how do you think up those clever opening lines? Oh.
I guess it's just a knack.
It must be.
Yeah. Well, now, what's that big book that you've been studying there? Is it your homework, perchance?
Don't be Persilly.
No.
This is my book of telephone numbers, Thurgy.
Telephone numbers?
Yeah. I want to see what girl's turn it is to live tonight.
Oh, I see. Charlie, I might have known that. All you care about is girls.
No, I'm beginning to appreciate older women, too.
Oh, you are?
Yes, I've got some here that are nearly 17.
So?
Yeah.
Young man, you should throw that book away.
What, after all the work I've done on it? No. Look here, just look at it, Bergy. I've got them all classified according to their hair.
Oh.
Now, there's a natural blondes, and unnatural blondes, and premature blondes.
I see.
Then over here I have Titians and imitations.
Imitations. Well, how can you waste your time that way?
Yeah.
You know, I attend strictly to business. Never give a thought to girls.
Now.
You should be ashamed.
You should be embalmed.
Oh, no. Charlie, I can see now that it's time that I had another serious talk with you.
Why? Have the birds and bees made some new discovery?
No.
Oh, you take it so heavy.
Yeah. I want to talk to you about your future. That's why I've asked a vocational guidance director to come here today.
Uh-oh.
You can talk over what you would like to do and make of yourself in the future. Talk about the work that you'd like to do.
Well, that's going to be a mighty short discussion.
Yeah. I don't see why. There are many fine professions. Why, you could be a surgeon. You might even write a textbook on surgery.
Yeah, that's nice. I could call it Inside People.
Perhaps you'd rather be a dentist.
It's such a grind.
I know. Or you could be an architect. You could design public buildings.
That ain't bad. I could draw plans for a school with no entrances.
All right. You might even be a lawyer. Yes, you might even be a judge.
Now you're talking, Bergy.
You'd like to be a judge.
I would. Really?
Yes.
A judge of bathing beauty contest.
There you are, right back to girls.
Oh, I'm lucky.
Yes. Charlie, what sort of a job would you prefer, really?
Well, I wouldn't mind being a horse trainer on a merry-go-round.
Oh, now, please. No, no.
No, I think I could capture dinosaurs for a living.
Dinosaurs?
Yeah.
There are no dinosaurs alive today.
No. Well, I'll wait until they make a comeback.
No.
Hey, get a load of that character that's coming in over here.
Oh, hello, 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 hello. I am Thomas T. Thomas, the friendly credit vocational director.
Welcome.
The right man for the right job, by George. That's our motto.
Well, Mr.
Thomas... You sent for me?
Yes, I did. Yes, Mr. Thomas, yes. And here's the young man for whom I want you to find the proper career.
Well. So this is the little square peg.
I resent that. This is a hate at first sight case.
Do you think you can help him, Mr. Thomas?
Oh, yes, Mr. Bergen, of course I can. Lots of people don't know what they're fitted for, and it's my business to give them fits.
To give them fits.
Jim Fitz.
Yeah.
You'll have to excuse me. Sometimes my sense of humor gets away from me.
Well, you can hardly blame it.
No. Charlie must choose a profession. I suggested that he might be a lawyer or a surgeon, but he wouldn't listen.
No, you see, he was absolutely Jim Dandy right.
Oh, I...
People are often talked into the wrong profession. Do you know what my father wanted me to be?
Somebody else's son.
Oh, how Milton Berle must envy me tonight.
Bergen, this happy hyena is not going to help me any.
Oh, yeah.
No, wait a minute. I haven't given up yet. No, indeedy. Let's test your mental responses.
Yeah.
Now, here's what we're going to do. Very interesting. I'll say a word, and you tell me the word it makes you think of.
Shoot.
Bang. Oh,
giving it us.
Yes, yes, of course, of course. Mr. Thomas, are you sure that you're competent at this work?
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Certainly. I've helped hundreds of people in the race to success.
Oh, fine.
Yesterday, I started a girl in the race by advising her to be a stenographer.
Uh-huh.
And today, she's on her first lap. On her first lap. Oh, I chalked up another one.
Yeah. I'm afraid you're not very helpful, Mr. Thomas.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I may as well leave. Yeah. With this kid, I've run into a log jam.
Yeah.
Run into a log
jam. Yeah, we heard it. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, Thomas, you're really a tease tonight.
I'm sorry about that, Charlie. I guess you'll have to choose your own profession.
Well, I've already decided. I want to be one of those detectives.
A detective?
A private eye.
You want to be a private eye?
If it's good enough for Dick Powell, it's good enough for me.
Well, Charlie, Dick Powell isn't really a private detective.
No?
No. On the radio, he plays the part of Richard Diamond, private detective. But in his new picture, Mrs. Mike, he's a Northwest Mounted Policeman up in Canada, you see?
Well, that's still a private eye. On horseback.
Yeah.
In bad weather.
No. You're determined to follow that career, are you?
That's for me, Bergen. That's for me. With those private eyes, dames are dime a dozen. And they've always got a dollar's worth.
Yes. All right. Dick Powell is a friend of mine. I'll go and see him and ask him to give you a job as his assistant.
Oh, Bergen, you're a pal. You know all those things I said about you? You know that you were lazy, stingy, and stubborn, and cranky?
Yes, Charlie.
Pick out one of them, and I'll take it back.
All right.
Now here's Ray Noble and his version of detective music in The Still of the Night.
Mortimer, this is a surprise. You know, I'm on my way to see Dick Powell, and here I meet you.
Where?
Well, here.
Well, who?
You.
Why?
Never mind. Never mind, just forget it. I just want you to know that I'm glad to see you.
Oh.
Now, where have you been keeping yourself?
Oh, same old place, inside my skin, I see. I make them up, you see.
Yeah, I know that. Well, I mean, I haven't seen you all week. Were you out to Snurdville?
Yeah, I was back there.
Yeah, I see.
Well, I went back because I wanted to see the new bathhouse in Snurdville.
New bathhouse?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, so Snurgill has a new bathhouse. Yeah, yeah. That's the way it goes. Yeah. Snurgill is growing up by leaps and frogs. Leaps by leaps. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tell me, are you a good swimmer?
Well, to tell the truth, I ain't no Johnny Weisenheimer.
No, I get it. Well, maybe you need some instruction sometime. I'll teach you the Australian crawl.
No, I'd never learn that. I can hardly swim in English. Is that...
Well, what about diving? Have you tried that?
Oh, what was the question?
What about diving?
Oh, yeah. I've done a few dives.
I see. Well, when you dive, what one do you perform the best? The single somersault?
No.
Double somersault?
No.
Half gainer? Full gainer? Swan? Jackknife?
When you get to belly whopper, you can stop there.
I see. Well, did you find the swimming pool cold?
No, I didn't find it at all. When I went in there with my swimming suit on, there was a bunch of fellers there shooting big marbles on green tables.
And just a minute now, I'm afraid this is going to be true. Are you sure you went to the right place to swim?
Yeah. There was a sign outside that said pool room.
Pool room.
And I'm going to quit coming here if you don't stop snickering at me.
All right.
Just out of all the time.
All right. A pool room isn't a place to swim.
Well, I sort of figured there was something wrong.
Yes. When did you start getting suspicious?
Well, I'd say the third time I dove.
The third time you dove. What did you suspect was wrong?
Well, I didn't splash. Oh, you didn't splash.
Let me explain. Pool is a popular pastime, similar to billiards, played upon oblong tables surrounded by elastic ledges or cushions against which ivory spheres are impelled with an elongated cue.
No! Well, anyhow, it's lucky there weren't no water in the pool. I might have never got out alive.
Well, now, why do you say that?
Well, there was a sign on the wall which says, "Look out for pool sharks."
Pool sharks.
I ain't so dumb, you know.
No. Mortimer, where does all your stupidity come from?
Oh, I grow it myself.
You grow it yourself.
That way it's always fresh.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
Speaking for your host of the airwaves, the Coca-Cola Company, let me remind you that today, tomorrow, every day, at service stations everywhere, the familiar red Coca-Cola cooler is your host of the highways. Just as with frosty bottles of Coke on its shelves, your own refrigerator becomes a host to all who enjoy your home. Well, Edgar kept his promise and talked to Dick Powell regarding Charlie's ambition to become a private eye. But the best laid plans sometimes go astray, and, well, here's Dick Powell to tell you about it himself.
Yeah, I'm Dick Powell. Just because I've played a private eye on the screen a few times, people think I'm that kind of fella in real life. Well, let me set you straight. I'm a plain guy, the same as everybody else. I've got a plain home in Beverly Hills, a plain swimming pool, and I drive a plain Cadillac. But I like to be agreeable. So when Edgar Bergen asked me to help him cure Charlie McCarthy of this detective business, I said, okay. I borrowed an office from a friend of mine, stuck a sign on the door that read Dick Powell, Private Investigator,
and sat down to wait for Edgar and Charlie. They showed up bright and early that morning. Come in.
Well, here we are, Dickie Bird, all ready to start private eyeing. I got my blackjack, and I'm just looking for a head to bounce it off.
Charlie, I can see that you have the wrong idea about the detective business.
Dick's right. It isn't nearly as exciting as you think it is.
It isn't?
No. It means long, tedious hours, hard, dull jobs, routine police work. And believe me, Charlie, a policeman's lot is not a happy one.
Policeman's lot is not a happy one. Gilbert to Sullivan, Gilbert to Sullivan, come in. One chorus, that is all.
When a felon's not engaged in his employment,
his employment,
or maturing his felonious little plans,
little plans,
his capacity for innocent enjoyment,
scent enjoyment,
is just as great as any honest man,
honest man.
Our feelings we with difficulty smother,
difficulty smother,
when constabulary duties to be done,
to be done,
ah, take one consideration with another.
Another.
A policeman's lot is not a happy one.
Oh.
When constabulary duties to be done,
a policeman's lot is not a happy one.
Happy one.
Who cares about policemen? I want to be a private eye.
It's even worse for a private peeper, Charlie. Listen. We get slugged and slapped around on every caper.
Every caper.
We get shot and stabbed and tossed into the creek.
Splash, splash.
Our exploits are featured in the daily paper.
Daily paper.
But they're very, very tough on the physique.
The physique.
It may seem a vital way to earn your victuals. You may think mayhem and homicide are fun.
Ha, ha.
But you'll find while you're reclining in hospital,
in hospital,
that a peeper's lot is not a healthy one.
Oh.
When private eyeing duties
to be done,
a peeper's lot is not a healthy one.
Healthy one.
Well, Charlie, my boy, what do you say now?
They can torture me and hit me with a hammer, but still I'll be a mighty lucky guy. All my clients will be gorgeous gals with glamour, and in private I'll be giving them the eye, 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 eye.
You'll get gals who don't know how to hold their hubbies.
I will.
And gals whose devastating days are done.
So what?
You'll get homely ones and skinny ones and chubbies.
I like them all.
A paper's lot is no romantic one.
Oh, when private eyeing duties to be done, a paper's lot is no romantic.
Fool me, Dick. I know what goes on with private eyes. Now, come on. When does the beautiful girl walk in here?
Charlie, it's only in the movies that the beautiful girl walks in and throws herself at the private eye.
Well, then what are we waiting for? Let's go to the movies.
No, Charlie, I agree with Dick. A detective's life isn't as glamorous as you think it is.
There's someone at the door. Come in.
He's pretty strong.
A beautiful girl walked in. She was tall and willowy with plenty of curves, and the clinging gown she wore really clanged. Or was it clunk? I didn't care. I wasn't in the mood for grammar. And then, as I noticed the ugly welt behind her ear, the bruise under her eye, and the scratches on her throat, some sixth sense told me she was in trouble. So I said to her, "Won't you sit down?"
"Thanks. I think I will."
There weren't any chairs around, so she sat on the floor. I could see Charlie was entranced by this glamorous creature, by the tone of his voice when he spoke.
"Hello, beautiful.
Why are you talking to me?"
"I wasn't looking at Bergen." "What's your trouble, sister?"
"I've been a naughty girl. I just killed my husband."
"Well, we all make mistakes."
"But I think I was drugged."
"Ah, now we're getting somewhere. Do you suspect anyone?"
"Yes. Does the eagle's eye mean anything to you?"
No, but I imagine it means a lot to the Eagle.
It's a secret society. They're trying to blackmail me. They want $100,000.
Why don't you go to the police?
Well, that's no good. They wouldn't give her a dime.
Well, I'm sorry, sister, but I can't handle your case.
Would $5,000 change your mind?
Even before the words were out of her mouth, I could feel my mind changing. I told the girl I'd take her case. She was so grateful she put her arms around my neck. This came as a surprise, because she was 10 feet away from me at the time. Then as she rested her head on my shoulder, I noticed for the first time that her ears were pierced, but not for earrings. You could have driven a truck through those holes. Not more than a minute after the girl left my office, there was a knock at the door.
Whoever knocked forgot to take off his brass knuckles.
Quick, Bergen, see who it is. Look, there in the hall.
Why, it's a duck.
And it's dead.
A dead duck, huh? Looks like foul play. Wait a minute, there's a note attached to its leg.
A note? What does it say, Dick?
It says here, lay off this case, or it'll happen to you what happened to this duck. And that shouldn't happen to a dog. Signed, the Eagle's Eye. What do you make of that note, fellas?
Well, I think the Eagle's Eye gang have a gag writer working for them.
Boys, this duck has been stuffed by a taxidermist. We can trace it.
Okay, let's get a taxi and go and see a dermist.
Well, here's the taxidermist shop. Let's go in.
Oh, it's a musty old place. I wonder where the taxidermist is.
Welcome, friends, to Ursel Twing's tidy taxidermy tavern.
Mr. Twing, do you stuff birds?
Well, now you asked me a very, very nice question there.
Yes,
as a matter of fact, I do. Heavens to Elizabeth, yes, I do. I stuff everything from an olive to a ballot box.
You must be very good at your profession.
Oh, you'll never know. As a matter of fact, I'm a regular Dr. Jekyll with the Hyde.
Then tell us, Mr. Twing, did you stuff this duck?
Well, now let me see. I might have had a hand in it.
Then where would you say this duck came from?
Well, offhand, I'd say from a duck egg.
Are you sure that you're a taxidermist?
Well, I'm fairly certain of it. As a matter of fact, I once stuffed a grizzly, if you'll pardon the expression, bear skin.
We are not interested in...
Do you see that tiger over there? Stuffing that beast was my greatest accomplishment.
What's so wonderful about stuffing a tiger?
While it was still alive.
Mr. Twing, would you make up your mind? Did you or did you not stuff this duck?
Well, now, just let me see a minute. No, gentlemen, that is not my stuffing. I always use breadcrumbs. All right.
Come on, fellas, let's get out of here. We got work to do.
Well, I've got work to do, too. I'm stuffing a giraffe, and I'm simply up to its neck. Goodbye, I.
Well, we weren't solving the case, so I decided it might be a good idea to drop in on the girl. She was wearing one of those strapless evening gowns. And if she was trying to hide a guilty conscience, she certainly wasn't dressed for it. She seemed surprised to see us.
Well, I'm surprised to see you.
There are a few questions we want to ask you, Miss... Oh, by the way, you didn't tell us your name.
It's Mary.
Ah, Mary, what a pretty name.
Mary Crummelgruber.
Ah, Mary, what a pretty name.
I say there. I say, hello. I hope I'm not intruding.
Well, who are you? Okay, now start talking.
Well, I'm this lady's next door neighbor, you see. I come in here often by mistake.
Now we're getting somewhere. Did you ever see this duck before?
Oh, yes.
Interesting. Tell us more about your wife and her duck.
Well, she had a habit of going out in the backyard and scratching in the garden, you know.
The duck?
No, my wife. She had the hives, you see. And in the evening, she had a habit of sitting in the easy chair by the fire and listening to the wireless.
Your wife?
No, the duck. No. Oh, he's just crazy about Lum and Abner.
Exactly. What did you do after the murder?
Oh, I just picked her up by the feathers.
Your wife or the duck?
Well, you know, I don't quite remember. You see, the lights went out about that time.
Oh, I...
Little by little, things were starting to make sense, although not to me. I knew if we could find the person who drugged Mary and murdered her neighbor's wife, it would lead us to the dirty rat that killed the duck. Then the police moved in. I was in the office talking things over with Bergen and Charlie when Inspector Farrell walked in. Farrell wasn't one of your old-fashioned flat-footed cops. He was of the modern school, college-bred, cultured, and soft-spoken. He came over to me and said,
"Fasten the jobbers! Is it you that's mixed up in this murder, Dick me by?"
"Yes, Inspector, and these are my two assistants."
"Fasten the jobbers!"
"No, Bergen and McCarthy."
"Hello, be jobbers. What's all this I'm hearing about your digging up a dead duck, Dick?"
"I've got it right here, Inspector."
"Well, hand it over now. I'd like to take a gander at that duck."
"You forgot to say the gathers."
"That's so I did. That's what I owe you. But jabbers, this job looks to me like the work of Frisco Eddie."
"You mean the Chicago gangster?"
No. "You're thinking of Boston Eddie. He's a Chicago gangster. Frisco Eddie hangs around Pittsburgh."
"Oh, yeah, I know the guy you mean. He's the Frisco Eddie who pals around with Cleveland Sam, the Philadelphia gambler from Detroit."
"Hey, you guys, what is it? What about this dead duck? Are we going to forget it or eat it or what?"
"Well, Dick me by, I'll give you 24 hours to bring in the killer, or it's the who's go for you."
"Be jabbers."
"Thank you, me boy." "Well, now I got to be going. I'm after parking me car in a 20-minute zone, and I can't afford to get in any trouble with the police. So long, jabbers."
"Yes. So long, Inspector."
"Fellas, we gotta work fast. We gotta find the headquarters of the Eagle Eye. Look out, here they come. Stand back, Bergen, I'll handle them." I don't know how long I was unconscious. There must have been a dozen thugs who broke in and beat up Edgar, Charlie, and myself. I staggered over to the mirror and saw there was a mouse under my eye. But when I went to feel it, it ran away. I looked at Edgar and Charlie. They were just coming to.
I feel like I've been hit on the head with a sledgehammer and run through a mangle. Every bone in my body aches.
I wish I felt that good.
No more private eye stuff for me, Charlie. I hope you've learned your lesson.
Yeah.
Don't worry, boys. We won't let them get away with this. The fun is just beginning.
Did you say fun?
Sure. We're going after that gang. You and Charlie meet me here early tomorrow morning. When I turned my back, something struck me, and I fell to the floor unconscious. I don't know exactly what happened, but to this day, I've always suspected that Bergen hit me over the head with Charlie McCarthy.
Edgar Bergen will be back in a moment. But in the meanwhile, remember, folks, whoever you are, whatever you do, wherever you may be, when you think of refreshment, think of Coca-Cola. For Coca-Cola makes any pause the pause that refreshes. And ice-cold Coca-Cola is everywhere. And now, here's Edgar Bergen.
Well, we're a little late, folks, so good night.
Remember to listen to Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy, brought to you by the Coca-Cola Company every Sunday. Bill Baldwin speaking for the famous Pasadena Playhouse. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Wiled away 90 minutes of great old-time radio for you this week, and we've got more coming up next week, so be right here to listen to it. Until then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.